Thanks again for the introduction, Brian. I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for the opportunity to share here today about a topic that we think a lot about and we include in our thinking about how folks work with their finances and their money. As I'm doing a little introduction here, I'm going to ask my associates here, Bruce and Lyle, to distribute some handouts that are PowerPoint slides. So you have something to keep a few notes on if you would like to do that. I will caveat on the front end of that, of your receiving those, that the slides have changed just a little bit since we did the printing. So as we're going through it, there may be just a little juxtaposition of some of the slides. If you're of the anal sort that everything has to be right in line, it won't be exactly that way, but they're there. So it is, as I mentioned, it's a real privilege for me to be among you. I attended when the question was asked this morning about are you a first time, or last evening about being a first time Boost participant. I attended Boost in something around 2003 or 2004 at what was then the business conference, I think. It might not have been called Boost then, and it was in, that particular one was over on Route 70, 71, headed down at the Doug Dutchman there off that exit, and so we had a great time and a great turnout. So it's always a great spirit among this group, and just want to congratulate the Rosedale group for the good work that you're doing, sharing information and education for a hungry public that would like to know more about how to be the best that God calls you to be in business, in life, and in church. So the work that we do at Everence, you heard Bruce reference last evening, that we are dedicated to helping individuals and institutions integrate their faith with their financial decisions, with stewardship principles, and not specifically in that mission line, but I would say informed and heavily directed and informed by Anabaptist stewardship principles. We're delighted and really our core work and relationships are in the broader Anabaptist community. We have about 35 denominational groups that we connect closely with, some more close than others, and our focus is stewardship, whether it's providing services in the form of charitable giving, charitable support, donor-advised type work, investments, insurance, and other aspects of the financial realm, and then also stewardship education. We do a significant amount, and as you might have guessed in my title, in work with congregations, we do a significant amount of work, and we have 14 individuals around the country that are noted as stewardship consultants. And our stewardship consultants are responsible for relating to, connecting with, and sharing with those churches. One of my partners in that work, many of you probably know, is Burl Jancy, our Director of Stewardship Education, and Burl sends his greetings of not being able to be here. He and I drew straws. We have a very large event tomorrow in Lancaster called Stewardship University, and one of the projects that Burl is working on is coming to fruit in that time at Stewardship University. So he regretfully said, well, I'll go there, and if you want to go to Boost, and then along came something and said, would you talk at Boost? So here I am. So I'm glad to be able to do that. Do you know what your money style type is? Are you a spender, a saver, or a servant? I'd encourage you to listen up the next little while here. You may think, well, I'm certainly a servant. Or maybe you're a little more humble and you say, I'm certainly a saver. I'm never a spender. No, you know, nobody's a spender. And actually, if you want to, nobody would admit to that. If you really want to know, look at your spouse if you're here with couples and say, you know, I'd say which one you think he or she is. My own journey started as, and I think we all, as with our Christian walks, we all change over time. I think we can modify, and they say husbands and wives tend to start to look like each other after a while. Probably true with our financial. At least we understand each other a little bit better. My own journey started as a hardcore saver, probably more on the line of being a hardcore frugalist, and I think we probably have a little more leaning in that in our community, our Anabaptist communities, to be a little more on the side of being prudent, or some might call it even a little bit more than prudent. We certainly have spenders, and we also have servants. I'd like to take my time this morning unpacking these ideas and sharing some information about that. I say that I grew up as a saver and more of a non-spender. Much of that sort of thing comes from your upbringing and your parental influence. And I can distinctly remember in 1970, my dad decided that his 1953 Chevrolet pickup truck would just about seen the last of it, and his kids thought it had two, and so he decided to shop for a truck. And we shopped, and we shopped, and we shopped, and we finally found one. It seemed like it was going to be just right. It was brand new. It had three speeds on the column. You remember those? We were just talking, the gentleman, Mr. Mass from Sorg here, we were talking about how vehicles have changed. We had three on the tree. We had an AM radio. My goodness, there was not air conditioning, but we got it for $3,000, and it was really good deal. I mean, other trucks were 7, 8, 9, you know, and now it's a truck, 50, 60,000 for a pickup truck, a lot more fancy. But the point was that stuck in my brain. And as I said, my wife would tell you that shopping for cars with me is a torturous kind of thing. So I resemble that. I'd like to share today a group of principles around a book called God and Money. How we discovered true riches at Harvard Business School. This book has been very popular at Everence, and we've shared it with a variety of different publics. And as I thought about your gathering here, from a business person's perspective, don't let the Harvard Business School part be scary or be whatever. You may need to make some interpretations and adjustments and a few of the numbers. But really what I'd like to share is some of the principles and ideas that these gentlemen share in their book. They are born-again Christians who were at, just a real quick bio, they were at Harvard Business School together, kind of discovered each other as born-again Christians in that setting, came to realize that over their time and their study that God was calling them to do something different than what they were learning at Harvard Business School, but to take the principles they were learning at Harvard and apply it in their realm. One of the gentlemen continued on a track of, as I understand it, continued on a track of working for a high-end company, a consulting company. The other became very involved in a ministry to individuals in high wealth settings and working with them in their philanthropy as well as their financial affairs. And that ministry has become very successful in regard to helping people kind of readdress their financial lives and rethink their financial lives with kingdom principles. So what I'm sharing from the book here really is the learnings that these two guys had. They've since written another book called True Riches. And it's a deeper level kind of dive, but God and Money is a good read if you'd like to get a hold of it. Starting off with some of the theological thoughts, and you may look at these and say, well, gosh, that sounds like Anabaptist theology in a lot of ways, and it is. There's a lot of continuity across the Christian community, and that's one of the things that we feel blessed about at Everence. As we work in many different communities, the theology of stewardship is quite consistent across the church. God created everything, and everything belongs to God. And generosity is a central part of that. And generosity is what we're called to as Christians, with not just our excess, but our generated assets, our generated wealth, and the income that we have. There was a reference made to tithing. We certainly subscribe to that. These gentlemen do as well, but they call the question of, is tithing where it stops? Is it 10% or is it some other part or some other way of looking at your financial world? Stewardship is a spiritual practice as well. It's just part of who we are and what we are as Christians, and I think even more so as Anabaptist Christians. When we look at our wealth, so the first slide was kind of intended to look a bit at our income, and we look at our wealth. Again, everything belongs to God. It's intended to be used for God's purposes, and wealth can be a challenge. There may be many stories here about being challenged with circumstances of wealth, and you may say, "Well, I wish I was challenged with that." That's part of God's maturing us, working with us, and that worldly wealth is here, heavenly treasure is eternal. Our theology and thinking when it comes to generosity, that we're called, first of all, to give to the poor, and the widows, orphans, it's a duty. It's a given in our world. Not in our world, but in our Christian world. And that giving should be voluntary, sacrificial, and cheerful, based on needs, not based only on what I have. And finally, generosity breaks the power that money holds over us. Christianity has, as we know, deep and many teachings. Other worldviews do as well. Maybe not quite as deep and not certainly from a Christ-centered background. But you can see some of the statements here around other worldviews that also have this as a central part of their worldview. So what's a spender? First of all, someone who pursues the greatest possible present consumption, even mindful of the need to save as best we can. We're mindful of it, but do we practice that? Are we able to make that decision to separate spending from saving? And you can think, I'm sure, of many different examples that are out there in the public eye of people who have spent and spent and spent, and the world today gives plenty of opportunity to do that on credit. One of the things I've been privileged to work with Brian on is our pastoral financial wellness program for pastors in churches. We work at providing and serving a spectrum of the churches that we work with at Everence. We have a grant that's underwritten by the Lilly Foundation. And we provide debt remediation grants to pastors who qualify, and the qualifications aren't hard. So we give a debt relief grant, but in doing that, we ask for their financial information. We also ask and expect that they talk with a financial counselor or a debt management counselor. And it's amazing how many times we see large credit card balances. I mean, there are numerous situations that we see that are challenging in the pastoral world around health costs, hospitalization, or tax problems, or car loans that have gotten to be quite large. But it's amazing to see how much credit card debt our pastors are carrying. And it's an encouragement to be able to help with that, but it's also something to think about as you're working with your pastor. But it may not be so much of a spender mentality as making ends meet. But credit cards certainly and availability of credit certainly gives rise to challenges of spending if people aren't able to manage there. The spender values today, doesn't think so much about tomorrow. And it's a way to enjoy every part of life that money can buy. If money can buy it and you can enjoy it, the spender, a true out-and-out spender, will look at things in that way. How about a saver? They strive to limit consumption to some extent, focusing instead on increasing wealth accumulation. putting it away because it's good to put it away. That's what I'm taught. That's what the Bible teaches. We put it away for a future, for the future. Or we put it away just for whatever. By contrast, the saver tends to value the future and views money as a tool for security, for stability, for flexibility, for freedom. We work in our business with planning for individuals, and often there's conversation, and typically conversation about retirement, putting money aside for retirement, or putting money aside for, more likely now, for changing your life circumstances to take on a second role in life that isn't that long-term or continuous job or business that you've had. And so we hesitate to use the word retirement in this case. It's more giving some freedom to have the opportunity to do things that are different than what you did during your earning, your key earning years. Money is also, directly or indirectly, often used in the worldly sense as an opportunity to keep score. You may have seen the TV commercial that is for one of the investment companies that the monetary number floats around over people's heads. If you've seen that, this person's $1,250,000. That's their retirement savings, and you know somebody else is $2.5 million, and somebody else is $800,000, and it just it's a very graphic representation of putting this value on money, and it can, in the wrong settings, become a way of keeping score. So the servant is, I think, in a lot of ways the crafting of the idea here, and the S's are from the writers. They're good. They're kind of like John Maxwell. Everything starts with an S, but I think servant is a good thought about the person who balances the person or the couple who balances and orients their life around limiting consumption and limiting wealth building, but focusing on giving money as they can toward blessing other people. They value eternity and view monetary things as a blessing that the world affords us to have, and we can impact the world for Christ, the work of Christ's kingdom. We want to make an impact with the most potential, but in the realm of helping the world and advancing the cause of Christ. So let's take the definitions and sort of put them together a little bit. And I think this relates right into what Luke said. This is a piece that the writers of God and Money put together. And really what they've done here is said that at a very basic level, what does the sort of the typical American, and I don't have the direct definition or location or area, but they basically say, you know, 25,000 is kind of government-wise at sort of our poverty level, roughly. $25,000 of income should be able to provide food. I think it's a challenge for shelter in many places, clothing and emergencies. So that's sort of the baseline physiological needs. And then in the middle here is safety, spending power of $25,000 to $60,000. You remember Luke said last night $70,000 is sort of that level that we accept particularly in the workplace, to say that, you know, people get by on that. Should be able to get by on $70,000 as employees, and that's household. I'm considering household income there, and that range provides safety. And then above that, you see self-actualization off of Maslow's hierarchy, and then having belonging and esteem and things above that, and then $150,000. I think actually what we're trying to say there is that the level is kind of open-ended depending on the earnings, but the fact is they cap it at $150,000 for reasons that you'll see here in some of the next few slides. I'll insert a couple slides here. I put this in this location to mention that this is information from their Harvard studies. Essentially what they've done here is they've done some surveying of their cohorts and people out in the public world. And the idea is to say, you know, what do you think a reasonable lifestyle spending limit might be for your circumstance? And you can see one of the things that this that happened with this slide is actually the color codes are inverted. So the small band at the top is less than 100,000 is needed. 100 to 150 is the yellow. The gray is 150 to 200, 200 to 300, more than 300,000 being needed for a reasonable lifestyle spending limit. I would argue, and as I was working at this, I would say that actually our communities are probably definitely inverted in the sense that up to 35% of folks would be less than 100,000. 100 to 150 would be that percentage band is probably about 10 percentage points, and then so on, with the idea that I think as the monetary amounts get higher, that the bands get narrower, and we're really talking mostly in our community of less than 100,000. But you can see the dispersion here from their surveys. My question at the bottom is for all of you: what would you say your reasonable lifestyle spending level is to have a lifestyle that you are called to, or boost participants more broadly? This again takes that same set of concepts and says takes and breaks the spending amount into the savings and giving off from the savings and giving amount. And you can see on the far side there at 50,000 of income, 40,000 for spending and 10,000 for saving or giving. They didn't differentiate between those two. If you take the 50,000 and you look at the relationship there, it's 20% would be in the giving or saving, and so you could say 10% tithing and 10% to saving for future needs. And again, working with higher levels, continuing to use some relationships there in terms of the and this is survey information that they've developed it from. How about net worth? We were talking about cash flow or earnings. In their studies, again, kind of skewed in some big ways, but at the same time, you can see the breakdown of the population there of how much net worth is needed in order to be prepared for the future, but also to be able to live and spend. I'm guessing that one of the things that's not in here is the servant piece, and I'm guessing that hasn't been calculated into many of these participants in their thinking. You may want to take that information, or if you get the book, you may want to take it and plot your own limits and levels. And the same thing with this. So these guys are consultants, and they tongue-in-cheek said that any book by consultants wouldn't be complete unless you had a 2x2 rubric like this. That's real standard in the consulting world. You have to have that two-square thing. So basically what they've done is said across the bottom, are my spending needs met? Are my saving needs met? Up the upper axis. And then set kind of lines that are maximum. So maximum spending. And in zone two, if your spending needs are met and that's your spending level, you give a lot and you save a lot. In zone three, if your needs are met, but maybe your saving needs are met, but not so much your spending needs, you are able to not save as much and give a lot. And out here in the zone four is to give radically and not save. And so it's just a way of sort of, if you're spatially inclined or oriented to look at things that way, it may be a helpful chart. From a savings perspective as a servant, these are some guidelines that they put forward. I think they're the sorts of counsel that you would see in many different teachings. I know at Everence, over the years, we've used the Good Sense Money Program. Certainly, Dave Ramsey in Financial Peace University, I think, would teach many of the same sorts of things: freedom from debt, emergency fund, affordable home ownership, retirement, that sort of thing, saving for those kind of needs, and probably then luxuries would be early retirement or inheritance. Saving as a servant, now in the realm of an entrepreneur or a business owner, because what I've talked about so far have been sort of payroll, paycheck type of relationship connections. But thinking about saving as a servant, as a business owner, is the value of your business mine or God's? Yours or God's? And what other returns are happening on business owner equity as a form of giving? And what about the future of your company when you're no longer owning it? What are your plans and what's the direction in terms of the use of that money for giving or retirement or whatever needs you have? There are numerous ways to invest, and really as we think about increasing liquid savings levels and also business valuations, what is the definition of investing? And it can be much broader than just kind of the traditional idea that we think about in our business, which is financial and market type investments. Might be investing in real estate. It might be investing in people, in your church or your community. And I think the old rule applies well there. Diversify, 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 but stick to what you know. Don't be called into something that you don't know, but it sounds really good, because if we all know what the old saying is about, if it sounds good, probably not. Generosity principles for a servant encourage you to be in a gospel-centered place and have gifts aligned with your ministry and to maximize effectiveness. I have a number of friends that are business owners, and they're very much interested in maximizing the effectiveness of their giving. I'm sure many of you are as well. And I like the term peanut butter philanthropy. You don't need to spread it around all over. It's often good to focus on what you're passionate about. It is good to focus on what you're passionate about, not dilute it. At Everence, we work a lot in financial investing. That's really a core part of what we do. And much of what we do in investing, or almost all of it, is around investing with values. So following Anabaptist principles and ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance, and that's sort of the public side. We're also working now in a realm where we have what we call traditional values portfolios that would be oriented toward the types of values that many of us would hold around traditional negatives like alcohol, tobacco, abortion. In the case of Anabaptist values, military defense being not included in the investment portfolios. We also work in advocacy, working with companies to change their plans and their behavior, and also funding for community development. So something more to think about as you start to think about your investing and what you do with the excess that you have. Praying, discerning, and listening, I think, are the key starting points, and I'd encourage you to take time after this session and after this weekend to continue to seek wisdom, to pray and seek God's direction. And I think you're all successful business owners, so avoiding paralysis, I'm guessing, is I think you know what that means, and when you identify it, to move on and move through it. I wanted to spend just a minute talking about charitable giving from the business perspective. So I've talked quite a bit about personal here, and that's what's a little different about my talk from Luke's or others, and that is that I've focused more on your personal matters. But we also are privileged at Everence to work with a variety of business owners and families, and we get involved with and engaged in conversations with them about giving from the company or within the company setting. I've worked for many years with a business owner that reminds me about employee engagement. What he and his family did was to give each employee $1,000 in a charitable fund. We offer what are called donor-advised funds. He gave them the opportunity to give that money away. And that wasn't taxable income. It was just money that he had donated into the fund, and then the employees each had an opportunity to give those funds to the charity of their choice, or the charities of their choice. And the idea was to teach giving for a workforce that didn't all resonate in that area from a Christian perspective, or from their own perspective, whatever that was, and also to be able to bless the community more broadly with funds from the company and from its employees. Worked with many businesses that tithe their business income, and sometimes we've got multiple partners, multiple stockholders, and so we work with I've worked with a number of companies over the years that the company gives 10% of its net income pro rata to the different stockholders or owners based on their ownership interest. And the idea there is what they do is they have their own what we call donor advised fund. It's a fund that the money goes into, and they can direct that out to charity, but the source of it is from the company. It's earned by the company, and the owners do their own giving as they are called to in their own circumstances. So one of the fundamental questions is, are you giving as a business owner, or are you giving as an individual? And just thinking about that in your giving setting. Some considerations for generosity and some tools listed here, and you can come back and take a look at those later, some tools. And you're certainly welcome to visit with any of my colleagues across the back row there, except for John Stalwart. He's a colleague. He and Melonic are colleagues, but they're not employees of Everence at the moment. So Bruce Breckville, you've seen and met. Chandler, what's that? Okay, yeah, let's talk, John. Lyle Miller, just a quick word. Chandler is a financial consultant, serves mostly in the western part of Ohio and in Indiana. Lyle is a stewardship consultant, works primarily in working with churches and nonprofits in Indiana, west into Iowa and the upper Midwest. So those of you from Kelowna and other places may know him. And then Eric Schroll joined us just recently here this morning. He's been with us many years, but he joined us this morning, wasn't introduced last night. And he's a financial consultant in this community here in Hartville. So welcome, Eric. Thank you. I'm past my time. I really appreciate your attentiveness, your listening, and hopefully you come from today and from this as some things that challenge your thinking and encourage you in your journey and your giving. Thank you, Brian.